Hey everybody, this is Albert Escobedo, your host for the Pet Peeves podcast. Just asking if you like my podcast, if you're enjoying the content and what you're listening to, become a sponsor. Find the link on the Anchor, the sponsor link on my Anchor website, and or on the SoundCloud website. Wherever you find the descriptions for these episodes, you can find the link to become a sponsor. For $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, help the podcast grow. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for listening. Bye. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Pet Peeves Podcast, episode number 440. I have one of my close friends from the LA comedy scene, a guy I met back in the show up, go up days in the belly room of the Comedy Store. Welcome to the show, Alex Young. How's it going, Alex?
Hey, man. Happy to be here. Just trying to stay sane and all that good stuff that the CDC is telling us to do.
Yeah, just follow the CDC recommendations on not getting bored. I'm sure they have some good advice for you guys out there. This is a part of it, is record a podcast, one of the CDC recommendations?
Yeah, I saw that, and that's one thing I'm not following. I got to start it, though. I'm going crazy. I'm getting a lot of cabin fever. I can only walk my dog, like, so many times. Before
you're in the right place to talk about dog walking as a replacement for boredom. You know, like that's something that everybody should, that has a dog that doesn't normally walk them. People will tell me, oh, I'm so bored. Like, well, go walk your dog again. It's like, I don't know what else to tell people. Honestly, this is what I'm doing. I'm recording podcasts and taking naps.
There you go. that sounds like my day-to-day. Listen to podcasts. I won't record, but I'll be like listening to podcasts, or I'll do a podcast. And then I'll watch the remaining, you know, films that are on the internet that I haven't watched already. And then I'll end up just going and taking a nap or something.
Yeah, there's not that many left. There's not too many movies I haven't seen. Luckily, they just keep coming out with new ones. So it's just like, all right, I'll watch that now.
Oh, my gosh. Somehow, I'll always get back to just rewatching, like, Bad Boys or something. I'll just rewatch, like, Narcos. Yep. Or like just the classics. Yeah,
That's how I know I need a new like thing when I'm watching a movie that I've already seen a bunch of times. And I'm just like, man, this is like not normal. It's not healthy. But I'm sure it's what everybody's doing. Mm-hmm. You just have to have something in between those things for something to keep everybody busy. And I mean, that's what I've been doing on the podcast, is asking comedians, like, what are you doing now that there's no stage time? Are you doing all the online shows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just did a Zoom show. It was pretty good. It was decent. Because just the way they produced it, I did a show with Samuel Bade and Kabir Singh. They have their KO Comedy Club, and you can hear people laugh, and you can see people in the room. Oh, wow. If you know how to set it up right on your side, you can actually see people, like you're doing crowd work, and if you know how to like just temper your timing to hear the laughs, let it die down, find that groove, and then just let it pop back up to where you're like, okay, there's the joke again. So it helped out, and hey, I made some money. I made some money, which is something you don't really do in LA comedy, is make money.
No. That's awesome. No, I did a couple of shows so far. I think I've probably done like four or five, but nice. They were all roast battles. Like, I've done a lot of Zoom roast battles. Have you done any of those yet?
I did. I was supposed to do that Tokyo battle versus LA roast battle, but I ended up having to do a weekend out in Arizona before, like, because they just had reopened. I had to cancel that roast battle. I did some in-live shows, you know, with all social distancing and, you know, following all the guidelines for COVID. Show went amazing. Did four shows. Everything was fine. You know, mask off, did my set, mask right back on. Everyone had their mask on. It was fantastic. But then right after that, I'm like, they closed everything back down. And I'm like, damn, was my set that bad or something? Like,
kind of happened. I'm lucky. Everything I've been doing through Zoom, like all my podcasting and all the Zoom roast battles I did, and I haven't done any actual stand-up shows. I was asked to do one, but it conflicted with my work schedule, so I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I did.
But the roast battles, they went pretty good. Go ahead.
I did the one in the podcast studio. We did a roast battle there, like the ones with Moses and Jay Light.
Yeah.
I did that. That was
the real ones.
Yeah, the real ones in person, but, you know, there was no crowd. There was, like, the engineers back there. You could hear them laughing. And, you know, you got...
Who'd you roast?
It was me and Jay Light. We ended up roasting Elvis.
Oh, that's right. You said that.
Yeah. You're good. I forgot who I was supposed to roast, but then they were busy. And then Jay stepped in again. And him and I had already roasted on the road together. So I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be fine. We're going to have a good time. So,
cool.
Yeah,
I saw fun. I saw some of them, and they were cool. I saw, like, Ryan Neeson battle Digits or something like that. I watched one of those.
Yeah, that was fun.
And it was good. I was like, oh, they set it up good. They have the guys in two different, you know, sides of the room, and then they record them separately, and they just splice it together, and it looks cool. And then the first battle I did, like I said, I did, like, four or five of them. People keep hitting me up to do these roast battles on the internet. So, like... The first one was real weird. It was like on some weird app called Up Live. Have you heard of Up Live?
No. What's Up Live?
What's Up Live? It's Up Live is a app through, I think it's got to be like Saudi or some Middle Eastern, because throughout the entire, you'll have 1,000 people, 1,500 people, 1,700 people chimed in for the roast battle, all watching, and they're all like clicking like and sending like emojis through. And if they like your joke, they'll send you like a big emoji that costs money. So people are on there, and how they make money on there is by people liking their stuff. If you post something that people like and you get a lot of likes, then you're going to get more attention, and the more attention you get, the more likely people are going to give you money. And it was cool. They had like it was like a benefit. They were used, I think they gave it for sex workers or something like that. The guy who runs it is Jimmy Shin.
Oh yeah, you know, I know Jimmy. Yeah.
So he's running. I think I did three of those with him, and I roasted like Greg Roke and somebody named Tamer. What's his name? Real funny comedian, Tamer something. Tamer. Catan, yeah, that's him.
Tamer's a fucking sweetheart. I love that guy.
Hell yeah. I had a really good time with him. That was just it. Like, I met people I didn't know, and then there were people I did know, like Greg Roke was there. Then I got to know Jimmy, and I didn't know him. And then he hit me up one time, like, in an emergency. He's like, hey, I need someone to roast today in 2 hours. Think you could write some jokes? And I was like, sure, whatever. And then it went pretty good. I'm like, man, this is what you need. Just, like, something that gets you writing jokes and that, you know, you write a joke and people laugh in real time, even though it's over Zoom.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is a new thing. I can handle this.
As long as I can hear laughs, like, I'm going to be okay. I just need that validation. I don't care where it's coming from. As long as it's real, that's all I care about. That's why the Zoom shows, I'm like, yeah. This is what we're gonna have to deal with for a while. There's no choice. I don't want to get fucking stagnant, man. You're like, you get nervous. Like when I went out to Arizona, I hadn't done stand up in like maybe what, 3.5-4 months.
Wow. Yeah.
So and they had me headline. So I was like, oh fuck, do I even know my jokes?
Pressure's
like,
on.
I had to sit there and listen to all my sets again. Luckily, I recorded them. Combing through my joke books, combing through my notepad. Just looking at all the stuff and all the little things that I want.
Feeling like an open micer again?
Exactly. And so by the time I did, like, you know, by the end of my first set, I was like, oh, yeah. I totally forgot this other set, and I forgot I had this other set. And I'm sitting in between shows just, like, racking my brain and also listening to the other things. And as soon as you think about a joke, you'll think of that tag. You're like, oh, yeah. I had this other tag, and, you know, your mind is all like... all connected together. So I'm like, oh, the synapses are firing now. This is going to be good. And then they shut down the whole fucking state again. So
yeah, that sucks, man. Because I think a lot of people went through what you did. And I haven't done any stand-up since March. Mm-hmm. None. And not live anyway. And even online. I just did those roast battles. Mm-hmm. But I went to a show, Juneteenth show, and I was supposed to get on, me and a bunch of other friends of mine. Mm-hmm. Like, they were supposed to put on 11 comedians, but they only ended up getting on like 4 people because the show started like 2.5 hours late.
Jeez.
So I didn't end up getting on, but I was like, I thought I was next for 2.5 hours. Do you know what I mean?
That's the worst, yeah.
Because the hosts were like, we're going to start now. For 2.5 hours, they said they're going to start now, but then they didn't. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't have time to get us all on. And I wasn't upset because the show was good. The 4 people they did get on, my friends, Darren and Roger and Chaz and Chelsea, they all had great sets.
Of course.
So it's like, oh, cool. You know, that at least makes our crew look good for the audience, because there was a good amount of people there. But I was like very fucking nervous.
Wasn't that at the beach or something?
Yeah, it was at Dockweiler Beach.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that intimidated me. An outside fucking Juneteenth show at the beach. I've never done a beach show. I haven't performed in months. I don't remember my jokes. I don't know how my jokes are going to go over for this crowd. And, you know, I was like, man, I haven't felt this in a while. Like, where I'm not confident over any of my material. Like, nothing.
And you as...
But it's a good feeling.
And you as a Latino person, you're just like, oh, man, I'm at a Juneteenth show. Okay, sure. All right.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And And I'm like, man, don't put me up. Don't put me up. And then they're like, okay, put me up. Put me up. And it's like you go through those emotions. Like I felt like I was in high school wrestling again where I'm like, like, oh, I don't want to. I hope I get a forfeit. But it's like, no, but then you regret it. Then you get the forfeit and you did all that practicing. You got all that ready and then you didn't even get to perform. It's a shitty feeling.
And, but then also like part of you was like, oh, thank God I didn't have to perform.
Yeah. Yeah. Until you see your friend Roger Lopez, who's also Mexican at a Juneteenth show, kill. And you're like, fuck, man, I want to do that. Yeah, you know, that feels good, too, when you're the underdog and you kill. And it's like, damn. I want to do that. And I know that I have jokes. And then after seeing them perform with their like A material and it worked, like, of course, you use your A material. It's going to work most of the time if you're a comic.
Dude, I think what helps me a lot with Zoom shows, like I have a stool. Luckily, I have like some stools. So I put a stool in front of my green screen and I have to have a mic in my hand. You know, I've seen people do shows and they've had their sets were fucking amazing. Where they didn't have a mic, but I feel like me having a mic keeps me in that training and that awareness. So when I get back on stage, I know how to like direct a mic or like I know how to still speak into it or like, you know, do whatever I can just to like
good skills.
Keep that familiarity there. I don't know if it matters, but it matters.
No, I think so.
Oh man.
I was at a, you know, we were doing another podcast recording where there was a bunch of us. We were all recording a podcast and everybody had trouble not talking over each other. So it was pitched. The idea was like, if you're holding the mic, then you get to talk, but like a fake mic, a fake not hooked up to anything. So it's like, if you're holding the mic, then you have some discipline. With the mic in your hand, you have some discipline. No mic in your hand, you're kind of just going off the cuff and it's not what we're used to. We're used to talking into a microphone.
Yeah. When you got the mic, is your the time to like speak, or if the person's bombing, then you have a chance to speak. Like that's what I miss about open mics too, is just like being able to like fuck with each other, or, like bust each other's balls. That is like the funnest thing. It's like, nope.
Yeah, just next.
Yep. You know, just in the middle of a set,
give them the light.
Boo. Just that.
Yeah, and I heard they opened up open mics like 2 weeks ago, and my friends were going. Like, they said they went to open mics, and that's exactly the stories they were telling about, like, heckling comedians that they think are corny, and it's fucking hilarious.
Where? Where are they doing open mics, like, right now?
I don't know, man. They went, and I didn't go. It was, like, a secret open mic where they don't want too many people to know, because then it'll get, like, dirtier, you know? And, of course, you got all the weirdo open micers that are probably carriers of some sort of disease.
Oh, of course.
And I think that's just like where, like, that's where disease is gonna get spread when you open up an open mic and you got all these comics coming through who like don't take it seriously, or you know they just are not gonna be the ones to wear a mask or cover their mouths. And because you have all the comedians who think it's cool to be a renegade.
Yeah, they don't even shower, so you're like, how?
That why type of shit.
Would I trust you? Like, I've seen you at the mics before, and you smell like hot garbage. I know I've been guilty of that. I've gone a full day of work and, you know, just went straight to a mic after that. That's not good. That's not a good look. Yeah, everyone, like you said, that whole renegade thing where you're like, oh, I'm a rock star. I don't need to wear a mask. Like, well, hey, your boy Brandon Schaub got COVID. So you're like, hey, might want to chill out with the whole no mask thing. It's not gonna hurt you, man. Plus, most of us don't even have health insurance. So, like, what the hell are you doing?
That's the other thing. What are you gonna do when you actually get sick as a comic with no insurance? But then the thing happened, like you were saying, we were doing our podcast and we were all wearing masks, and then everything got taken down a level, so we all took our masks off, and then they put them back into phase one or whatever. We all the safeties went back up. So it's like, okay, it's really hard to record a podcast with a mask on. Like, it's better if we all just went home and filmed over Zoom like you and I are doing right now. Because it sounds like shit when people have masks on and they're trying to talk into a microphone.
Dude, even like outdoor mics. Like, I went with my wife one time. She just wanted to tag along just to get out of the house. So I was like, it's a sure. mic. You sure you want to come? Like, I've never asked her to come to, like, any mics or shows or anything. Only, like, if I'm taping something, then I'm like, hey, you can come to this if you want to. Whatever. But I never encourage her to, like, go to any of these shows at all. I don't know. She's heard all of it. And, you know, she's there in support. But we ended up going to this mic. And she was like, oh, I want to get the house. Please, let me get the house. So she just stayed in the car the whole time just to, like, be out. And she saw me walking and talking to comics. And, you know, for sure, like, slowly but surely, like, the masks start to come off. They lower down. Mm-hmm. And then my wife put me in a two-week quarantine, self-isolation for 2 weeks because of that, because of what I did.
See?
Yep.
Type of shit. It's usually people like you and I, married people or people with children or people who, you know, are around their families or just smart people. They're the ones taking it more seriously. But then again... Mm-hmm. Again, I was at the podcast recording with my friends and we're hanging out, and before you know it, everybody's masks are down and we're sharing food and we're, you know, we're hanging out, and it's just like, well, here it is.
And this is what they warn you about. We're laughing.
Yeah, and we're all laughing. Everybody's mouth is open. But I got tested and I'm negative. So after that, I started feeling invincible, and that's probably a bad thing too.
Yeah, no, same here. I was like, man, I'm negative. I'm going to go right into the hotbed of Arizona and I'm going to do these four shows and I'm going to be fine because... I've been going to, like, the protest to show support, mask on, we're good, I'm still negative, great. All right, let's keep it moving here and there, just being very careful about it. But also, like, you know, you gotta also have respect for other people. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, no, and I think, like, I'm, you know, they're making me still go to work as a teacher. So, like, I'll have a meeting with another teacher, and they'll come into my room, and in the beginning, they're talking to me with a mask on, but as the conversation goes on and on, they want to pull their mask down, and I'm just like, all right, don't aim your face at me. Shit. How about that? Just your face the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from me, and then I have to just make sure I wash my hands a lot.
Yeah.
I do all the sanitizing, all the Lysoling of my desk and all that stuff. But it's like...
How many times can you do it, though? You know, every freaking time.
No, it's annoying. It doesn't work. Like, the fact that I'm back at work is ridiculous. Like, you guys are telling me that this is a global killer, a pandemic, and people are dying, but you still want me at work when I'm teaching online. I'm teaching online right now. There's no students, but they want us there so teachers are not being lazy if we have to go to campus. You know, they're saying teachers that were teaching from home, that every time they would check in on them, that there would be no class going on when there's supposed to be class for 10 hours a day. You know, your AM class, 5 hours, your PM class, 5 hours. It's a college. And some of the teachers were just like telling the kids, hey, you get a 4-day weekend. You get a 5-day weekend just because they didn't feel like teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I get it. You want to be a cool teacher, but that's not how it works, dude. You can't be that cool. Like, I've been a teacher for a long time, and I'm pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
But we had class every day for me. Like, my students did not get a break. Even though we were on COVID, I made sure to keep up my standards as high as I possibly could while still being understanding for the students who have, like, kids at home or families at home or slow internet. But I didn't let them do nothing, you know?
Yeah.
If they couldn't do my requirements, I would give them a replacement. Like, all right, your internet is slow, then write me some paragraphs. Oh, okay, you can't be here today because your family's all blah, 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 doing this, doing that. Somebody in your house has COVID or sick. All right, then you need to be on during these times and these times and these times to make up for that time. Oh, you can't? Then you need to drop my class because I'm not going to make a brand new set of rules just for you. I understand COVID-19, but I have 45 students and you're the only one who can't do it. So I can't change all my rules just for you. Although I'm being understanding, here are your options. I'm not just going to fail you. I'm giving you some options, but I'm not changing the rules. And after you give them those strict standards, they don't question you. All of those students that were able to are able to. They do it. All the ones that were really, really honestly, truly didn't have the technology, didn't have the time, didn't have, you know, if you have a baby and you were taking my class and you're an adult, it's an adult class, there's no childcare, right? So some of my students that are single moms really can't do it.
So for them,
I give them a pass.
Yeah.
But for the students who are like, oh, well, I was at my friend's house. I'm like, what? That's not a fucking excuse. Like, oh, I was at McDonald's. Like, what? Then you're absent. Like, I don't care. You can't try to take my class from the phone in the McDonald's drive-thru. Like, I get pissed when I can hear shit going on in the background. I'm like, no, you're supposed to be like, this is class. You're supposed to be in a quiet space with nothing going on, and I can hear shit going on in the background. And every once in a while, they'll get on the camera, and I can see, like, people, and I can hear their little friends laughing. I mean, a lot of my students are, like, 18, 19.
Yeah.
So it's like, they're just trying to live their lives, but I'm trying to catch them.
Dude, that is rough. You're like, you spend most of your time wrangling people in. I taught kids for a while. I taught them, we were doing like screenwriting for kids. Like, I was helping these kids learn how to write and just like get their ideas on paper, working through like a couple academies and nonprofits. And it also like really kept me sharp. So it was like a win-win situation. But at the same time, you're wrangling kids, you're talking to them. Their parents are wondering why, you know, they're not, you know, fucking Michael Bay yet, or you're just like, whoa, it takes time for, you know, your kid to write this action thriller. You're in the middle of nowhere. I'm just teaching your kid just to like how to have structure in their stories. That's all I'm here for. That's literally it. Yeah. I can't make any calls.
Like, it's up to them.
I do not have Spielberg on speed dial, you know?
No, I bet. No, that sounds awful. Like, I'm glad I'm not teaching children. Like, my sister's teaching high school online right now. Well, not anymore. It's summer break, but she was, mm-hmm. and that sounded terrible. And oof. I couldn't imagine doing like younger kids than that. It would be terrible. Like, my adult students, I can hold them pretty accountable.
Yeah.
And I can kind of, you know, predict what their lives are like, even though some of them might have some extremes. But other than that, like, because they're adults, I don't really have to baby them. I could, but I choose not to because I'm an asshole.
Dude, some of these kids that I used to work with also came from a lot of money, so having to deal with that personality too, like, well, you're here for me, so you should like meet me up right now. I'm like, no, we didn't schedule this. I'm not gonna like stop doing what I'm doing just to like coach you or work with you because you felt like it. You're like, whoa, hey, calm down, Bruce Wayne. Like, I need you to like take a couple steps back. we'll meet when we meet.
I don't miss that, working with rich kids, but, you know, it was different. I was teaching in a classroom. You're doing it online. That sounds like just impossible, especially if they have your contact information. I never give any of my students, like, my phone number.
It was one-on-one, and so, like, you have to be on the whole time, and I feel like I don't like working, like, I just don't like working with kids a lot, just, like, 24/7, because then you end up, it ends up messing with you a little bit to where, like, you start speaking like a child.
Yeah,
you're like, you start talking about, you know, cartoons and everything, and you're just like, wait, gross, I'm an adult, get out of here.
That's funny. You start acting like a kid when you're around kids. But I mean, as far as teaching goes, mm-hmm. that's what you're supposed to do. Like, when I taught kindergarten, I did a lot of singing and dancing. Now I teach adults, you're not gonna ever catch me singing or dancing.
Yeah, it is.
When I taught kindergarten, man, mm-hmm. I would sing and dance every day. Every morning, I would sing and dance with my students because it would make them happy. And then for the rest of the day, they would do what I want them to do. But like, if I was mm-hmm. in a bad mood or didn't play games with them or let them fucking climb on me like a tree,
Jesus.
Then later on, they wouldn't do what I want them to do. Yeah, kindergarten was tough, but it was fun, man. Of all the teaching gigs I've had, it was the most fun, but it was like herding cats. They were always trying to kill themselves.
Yeah.
They're always trying to accidentally die.
Like, stop, get off of that tree.
Don't put your finger in the light socket. Every little boy wants to put his finger or some kind of metal device into the plugs in the wall. Like, is that always something trying to all destroy little boys stuff. Do?
Dude, you have...
Yeah, no.
Not only is it, like, that one, like, kid, it's freaking, like, 10 or 20 of them that are just trying to, like, burn down a building. Exactly. And you're like, oh, my God, can you all stop? That's just why I couldn't do it, man. Hats off to you for being a teacher, but I couldn't do it. And then not that many kids for that duration. I can't do it.
It's like working with dogs. That's what I equate it to. Like, in the beginning of my life, you know, I never thought I was going to be a teacher.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd be a teacher, right? When I got out of school, I was supposed to go work with animals. That's what I was supposed to do. I wasn't supposed to do stand-up comedy. I wasn't supposed to be a teacher, none of that. I just happened to like fall ass backwards into these things, being a teacher. But though, as soon as I was teaching little kids, like 5, 6, 7 years old, the kind of like reinforcement and classical conditioning and operant conditioning philosophies, mm-hmm. psychologies they use mm-hmm. is the exact same shit they use for dogs. Mm-hmm. Reward, punishment, negative reinforcement, positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
That terminology is exactly the same shit we use to train animals.
True.
So I'm like, okay, I got this. Instead of dog treats, you give them stickers.
Yeah, and you just ring a bell every time you want to feed your child. You're like, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, in one form or another. I mean, there's some kind of operant conditioning going on there. For me, it'd be just be my mom used to knock on the wall. Like in the mornings when there was breakfast ready, she would knock on the walls.
Yeah.
And if you got up to go eat, you did. If you didn't, my mom wouldn't wake us up. My mom would let us fucking sleep through meals. And it would just be like, you learned as you got older. As you get older, you learn, oh, shit, if you want, like, food, you better get up when you hear that knock. Because my mom was, like, a militant like that. Super militant. She taught us a lot, like, about, like, being independent. Like, that's the other thing my mom would do, too, that other people's parents didn't do. Like, if we didn't like what my mom made, then we just didn't eat. Like, my mom didn't make special meals for us. My mom would just cook. And if we didn't want to eat it, then we just didn't eat.
That's badass. But
if you're hungry enough, you'll fucking eat, though. That's what you learn. You learn that you're not really, you're being stubborn. You're being picky. If you're super hungry, you'll eat it. And then you're like, oh, shit, this isn't so bad. And then you're not a picky eater.
Damn, I was not a picky eater at all when I was young. I think it's because we grew up so fucking poor that whatever my mom made, you just ate that. There was, like, no discussion for it at all. Like, she didn't make anything special either. She was just like, well, this is dinner. Just eat. Get your share. And, you know, of course, the whole family would just sit there and people would just learn how to be polite. But we all did everything family style and that was it.
Yeah, man. I bet I learned a lot. I mean, I'm not sure how you grew up, but when I lived in South Korea, that Asian, like, family style eating that was across the board, no matter what, you start to appreciate. You know, when I first went to South Korea and I would tell people that I'm gonna go eat alone, they would think that I was sad and depressed. They'd be like, oh, no, we'll go eat with you. It's very American to eat alone.
Yeah, it really is. You drive by any restaurant, you see people just sitting by themselves alone in restaurants. You're like, you could have just done that at home. Why? But, you know, to each their own. I don't think I've ever sat in a restaurant alone and ate. Yeah, that's a weird thing.
Yeah,
I think that comes from my
upbringing. Not like a real restaurant, like Denny's.
Yeah, I've never sat and ate alone at a restaurant. I've sat in my car a lot alone and ate. I think that's the last shred of my own personal dignity where I'm like, will not eat at a restaurant alone. I just don't want to be the guy. I either got to have somebody. I've never, like, watched a movie alone, too. I don't know. I don't know if that's weird or not, but I've never seen...
Like, gone to a movie theater?
Yeah, but I know people do it all the time, and I've been told it's one of the most liberating experiences. It feels like, you know, it's your own theater that you rented out the place for yourself, but no, I can't do it. Fucked up.
I went to go see Avatar by myself one time. Mm-hmm. That's the only movie I've ever seen alone because all my friends went without me and I was kind of butthurt. But I went by myself and it was not a great experience. I felt sad. I felt alone. I felt like I had no friends. It is not cool.
Yeah,
but eating alone, I have no problem with that. I've eaten alone a lot. I can get a lot of writing done. If I'm eating at like a diner by myself, I can write a lot.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Well, in that case, I guess I have been alone, well, like in a lot of coffee shops, I guess, or any other place where I can just, if I'm writing, then, dude, it's me all by myself for, like, however long it takes to work on that project. But, yeah, I've got to write alone unless I'm, like, inside a writing room or something.
Yeah, that was going to be the next thing I wanted to talk about with, you know, I like to tell the podcast listeners, like, how I know you and everything. And, first of all, I met you at Show Up, Go Up, maybe before Roast Battle was ever even a thing yet. I think I met you before it was a thing. Because didn't it start as a segment in Show Up, Go Up?
I think it did. I think we met probably after Roast Battle. Because, like, it used to be on Tuesdays. And then Roast Battle blew up. And then they had to move Show Up, Go Up from Tuesdays until Sundays, if I remember correctly.
Okay,
or
that
was
makes
it the
sense.
Other way
so
around?
When I met Roast Battle,
You
have to be right, because when I first started going to Show Up, Go Up, people were already doing the, like, Roast Battle practice. You know, they were practicing those Roast Battle jokes.
Yeah.
But I had still never seen Roast Battle, and I had never seen it yet. So I just remember meeting Alex and hanging out in the belly room and just, you know, being friends and kicking it and, you know, chugging beers in the parking lot because the beers at the Comedy Store are too expensive.
Yeah, we would drink on that little lot, west of the store.
Yep, and that's how I met a lot of people, just, like, hanging out outside of the Comedy Store, around the Comedy Store, but still in Show Up, Go Up in general, the belly room. And then the Roast Battle came around, and Alex was a part of it in the beginning and helped me rewrite some of my jokes. that I ended up winning with. And, you know, and then it's just like you've been a part of the roast battle, such a big, strong part of it for so long. And it's like, man, I'm just glad that I was able to, you know, meet you before I knew anything about it. So I didn't mm-hmm. associate you with roast battle like a lot of people probably do now. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't. All the people that I met before mm-hmm. I saw roast battle, like, I don't associate them with roast battle. They're just mm-hmm. comedians that do roast battle like me.
Yeah.
But I bet all the other people around you that aren't comedians probably still see you as the roast battle. Still, is that right? Am I right or wrong?
I think definitely so. Yeah, that's the thing I'm definitely known for. And that's why I feel like it's done good and bad. But the good thing is that I've just always just worked on my stand-up. I think, like, once I'm outside of roast battle, then I'm doing as many mics and as many shows and doing, like, whatever I can. So there's not necessarily yeah. one thing that's going to unravel, you know, my thing. Like, if I was only doing, like, roast battle, and then with everything that's going on right now, you're like, yo, where can you necessarily go? Like, there's only, like, a couple spaces. Yeah, here and there online. But, like, for the most part, it's just not there. It's not normal anymore. You know, you can't get those big explosions yeah. in the room. You can't necessarily do that here and there. Yeah. But I think, I've always, like, focused on my stand up, like, and continued, like, writing all the time, just because I just don't want to become like a dull blade. You know, you're constantly working. I want to make money out of this. I want to continue, like, to support, you know, myself, and, you know, go on trips with my wife and go do fun things. So you got to be really, really, really fucking good for someone to be like, hey, here's a drink ticket and like $20, you know. So to get to yeah. do that on a bigger level, which I want to do, gosh, who knows, man. We are on a ship at port right now when it comes to comedy. So some are getting out, yeah. in, some are getting out. Who knows? They're doing like shows at drive-in movie theaters now. So you got to yeah. work and see if you can get with on those shows. And you got to see, like, it's completely fucking changed. Like, how are we going to support ourselves now? Like, I'm lucky enough to, like, have other sources of income to where, like, I do commercials. I do just whatever the fuck I can. Just like, hey.
Yeah, I was going to say that one of the first things I remember you telling me is that I should get a SAG card for, like, insurance. You told mm-hmm. me that years ago. Mm-hmm. And that was some advice you gave me. And then the other advice you gave me was, no matter how well roast battle is going, that you should always focus on your stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
You told me that after I had lost once, and I was all bummed out and, like, feeling shitty about myself. And you're telling mm-hmm. me, don't worry about it, man. You're a stand-up comedian. This is just for blah, blah, blah. It's just for, you know, don't worry about the loss.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are the things I never forget. Those are pieces of advice that, you know, you need to hear from somebody like you who's been the roast battle champ. You've been number one, and you were telling me, don't worry about it. You're a comedian. You're a stand-up. I was like, damn, you need yeah. to hear that from people who know what they're talking about. You know, if my mom says that to me or my wife, it doesn't mean so much. But coming from you, it meant a lot.
I appreciate that, man. It was told to me through people that I look up to. You know, they were just like, hey, just don't get weak on your stand-up, because number one, you can't necessarily tour on roast battle as much as you can on stand-up. You know, people just want to, people want to hear jokes. They want to get to know you. And if you're up there just lobbing grenades onto somebody all day long, you're just like, oh, okay, that's a lot. You know, not everyone's going to really fuck with it. So make sure your stand-up is good so you can continue to work. And roast battle is also another thing. Roast battle has done so much for me career-wise. And that's why I'm loyal to it. I want it to keep going because, dude, like, it gave me my first Comedy Central credit. I was able to use that money to pay for, you know, a trip, and the writing gigs that, like, I've gotten from it has helped me pay my bills. And then it's helped me pay for stand-up tours because, you know, you got to, like, meet some people halfway when it comes to, like, going on the road. They're like, hey, if you get yourself out here, we don't take care of, you know, travel, but we'll take care of lodging, or the other way around. But first and foremost, you just got to be fucking funny. It's yeah. helped me. It's definitely complimented my stand up. I'll tell you that much. Because
no, you and a lot of other comics too. I mean, I think a lot of people are feeling like you are just grateful, but not reliant.
Yeah, it should not be your end all be all. You should be definitely good at many other things. Because, man, that's the fucking time we're in now where you got to be good at fucking five things just to get one paycheck. It's brutal.
Yeah.
But hey, that's
but that's rough. But that's the hustle. I think that's what you were talking about. You have to have that sharp sword. So like I've always been able to fall back on my veterinary stuff, right? So I've always been able to have a job that at least like I could pay my rent and pay for food and gas and not be struggling too much. But for the first time in my whole life, I have a job that I make a little bit better money than I ever have before. So like I'm in a new position of comfort, but all I've really done with that comfort is like, all right, what am I going to do with my stand-up now? What am I going to do with my podcast now? Now I'm in a position that now I actually have some, like the knee is off my neck, as you might want to say. And I can actually start focusing on how I want to do comedy now as a much older person than when I first started doing stand-up. I started doing stand-up when I was 21, and now I'm 36. And then I just got married a year ago. So for 15 years of comedy, I was a single dude, which is not at all the life I live now. Like, I wasn't, like, me and my wife weren't dating. I was single. And then all of a sudden, we got back together and we got married, like, within a 2.5 year period. So it was like, my comedy is so different. Like, just the way I think and the way the jokes I used to tell, like all my old material, it's like, man, I'm not that person anymore. I'm a different person. I don't even have those ideals.
So nah, I'm like having to revamp and don't throw those away though, because
no, I have them, and there, a lot of them are recorded. I mean, in my special, like because I have my special out that has 10 years of jokes on it, my first 10 years of jokes that are on that free special on YouTube. Go watch it, called "Don't Judge Me." Anybody listening to this, and it has like all my really good material on there, all my best material from those times, and then you know, and that was already released 2 years ago, so I have new material. But it's all after I got married. It's all after I got married. So I really think like the corner I'm turning is very relationship heavy, animal pet care heavy, and just being like a positive role model, like a motivational speaker type thing in my comedy. And before I was like an angry, fucking smart alecky, curmudgeon-y comic. And now I don't want to be curmudgeon-y anymore. I don't want to be the comedian that everybody thinks is in a bad mood. Because people would tell me that, to be like, oh, you seem like such an asshole. And I'm like, well, my comedy side is. My comedy side is very sarcastic, very fucking complainy, like Bill Burr-ish, I would type it as. But those are the comics I like. Bill Burr is like my goat.
I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with venting, because if you deny all those feelings you have about things, like, dude, I was so angry about, what was it the other day that I was bitching my wife about, and then she kind of got mad, but then she also understood that that's how I get out my feelings. Plus, I haven't done stand-up as much, so I haven't been able to get it out. Like, so she understood. I think I got pissed. See, that's the dumb thing. I can't even remember, like, what the hell it was. It was... fuck. Nah, never mind. If it comes to me, it comes to me. But I think it's healthy to, like, talk about it on stage, because a lot of people will feel that same way. You know, if you feel the same way about certain things. Right. So don't let it go.
One of my best bits I have right now is about complainers. But my whole, like, the big end of the joke is that I'm complaining about complainers. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It is funny, and it is nice to vent. And that's what my joke is about. Like, yeah, venting is one thing. But if you're a broken record and you're complaining about the same shit all the time, then you're just a loser. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference.
Yeah, that's so true. Like, I save it for the stage, right? That whole saying.
No, and I do see that. Like, the less time I spend on stage, the more likely I am to yell at somebody for no reason. And it's not like, Albert, why are you yelling? Like, I can't even hear myself yelling. I just start talking louder, like I'm trying to reach the back of the room. That's just like my habit. You're not laughing. You're not understanding me. I need to talk louder and clearer. But I'm not mad. It's just I'm talking louder.
Yeah, we have that.
And I'm probably a little
mad. We have that habit where we project. We're used to like, I don't know. Maybe I am. I don't know. You are. Sounds like where we talk just to, we just have our instrument tuned where when we talk, it carries. And that's why I have a lot of trouble. Like, I get into a lot of trouble for talking shit about people when I'm out and about, because I'm like, look at this fucking guy, you know? Oh,
cool. And everybody can hear you.
Yeah, and people around me start like looking at me, or like, you know, some people, I'll get a laugh every now and then. And then they're, I was like, oh my God, I'm fucking loud. I forget. Or like, I was talking to my dog on a walk the other day, and then out of nowhere, I just hear upstairs like, aw. And I was like, oh shit, that's right. I'm out here talking to my dog like a psycho person in the neighborhood. Because my puppy, like, I take her for a walk like at least 3 times a day. And I guess when I'm talking to her and my voice carries, and all the buildings in my neighborhood are mostly like made of brick. So like everything just bounces off of each other. Even like right now, like my wife can hear me in the bedroom just because my voice carries right through the walls.
I bet.
Yeah, so I have to keep it.
No, I have the same problem. My wife always gets mad at me when we're in restaurants. She'll be like, everybody can hear you. And I'm like, no, they can't. Like,
but no, you can't. I'm sure she's right. Can you fucking hear me? Yes. Sorry.
No, I can't. I don't know. It's like I don't hear it. I don't hear that I'm talking loudly. But like when I'm doing a recording, you know, mm-hmm. I can see my little levels, the decibel levels on the recording. I'm like, holy shit, mm-hmm. I do talk loud. I have to like mm-hmm. move my head back or get turn the levels down or whatever. But yeah, I think it's just from talking in a microphone mm-hmm. and then being a teacher, you gotta project. Mm-hmm. Projecting is just natural.
Yeah, like establishing authority.
It's probably just something natural.
Yeah,
and it works for the dog too.
Dude, you're working with like, you know, teenagers, like young adults, and you just have to like establish some kind of authority because they're testing you. They're constantly testing you, just like,
oh yeah,
you know, just like freaking animals, you know, are constantly just testing you to see where the line is.
It's like the raptors in Jurassic Park testing the fence.
Exactly. Yeah, everyone's a raptor.
Yeah, they are, man. Because everybody wants their life to be a little bit easier. They want to find some way to take advantage. So how do they do that? They keep poking and prodding. How far can I push? How much can I take advantage? How far can I go before something bad will happen? Everybody learns the hard way. No one takes just your straight advice. People want to learn the hard way. Hey, thank you guys for coming back. We had a little technical difficulty there, but thank you for listening to our little cat fountain commercial. Alex, I don't know if you know, but I'm pushing a product. It's the Your Power Pet Fountain. It's a water fountain that cats can drink out of because cats don't like to drink from a bowl on the ground. So cats don't get enough water usually, and then they have like kidney problems when they're older. So a lot of people's cats, they like let the cat drink from the faucet. Like, they'll just leave the faucet running so cats can drink from there. And, you know, that's not nice. That's not good. You don't want your cat all up in your faucet. So get the pet fountain. Get the Your Power automatic pet fountain. It's mostly for cats. Dogs can drink it, too.
Yeah, also you're helping with climate control.
There you go. You're not letting the water just run. There's a water crisis here in California. Mm-hmm. And the water fountain, it's easy. You just pour water in it. It just flows through. And the sound, the trickling sound, makes your animal want to drink out of it. And if you buy one through my Amazon affiliate link, then like 10% of it or some small amount is contributed to the Pet Peeves podcast. And automatically, like, you don't pay any more money. It doesn't cost you anything to use the affiliate link. The product costs you exactly the same amount, but the Pet Peeves podcast gets a contribution. So thank you guys that do use the affiliate link. And for those of you guys that want to become supporters and members of the Pet Peeves podcast, find the link on Anchor. I will take your support. You could be a member for $1 a month or $5 a month or $10 a month or any of those amounts or in between those amounts as well, I think. Maybe just those three amounts. Or more. I don't know. Just send me money. I have Cash App and Venmo, all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to start pushing merch. You know, we're going to start making Pet Peeves Podcast t-shirts and hats and hoodies and shit like that. And we'll see what happens, man. We're trying to branch out. So anybody who wants to get involved, become a member, we appreciate it. I will shout you out. And of course, anytime anybody has any pet questions, you guys should ask me. Like any comedian, especially, if you have pet questions, ask me. Alex has pets. A bunch of my friends have pets, and I help them with just plain advice. It's easy. Those things are easy. But like nail trimmings, ear cleanings, anal gland expression, anything like that. That's like that. People bring their animals to the vet, spend hundreds of dollars on something I can literally come over there and do for much cheaper than that, or at least give you advice on how you could do it yourself. Animal hospitals make a shit ton of money off of things that people could do at home if they were just properly trained, and I want to help comedians.
Wait, what? So, what is anal?
Let me know about
what
that.
What is anal gland expression?
Oh, the anal sacs. So your dog, you have a little dog. Your dog is young, though. How old is
she
your dog?
She is 6 months, and I will not allow her to do anal yet.
No, not yet? Just wait. What if there's lots of lube? What if a doctor's doing it? Are you okay with a doctor doing it?
No, that's my daughter. She's not ready for that yet. I don't think she wants it.
All right. Well, the anal sacs are scent sacs on the anus, on the inside of the anus, that you can't see from the outside. Mm-hmm. They're inside the dog's butthole, mm-hmm. and they fill up with a pheromone fluid mm-hmm. that tells other dogs a lot about them. So when the dogs poop, that anal sac empties with the poop, and in the poop is the smell that tells other dogs about that dog, where they've been, what they eat, if it's a boy or a girl, if it's pregnant, if it's in heat, all those types of things that dogs could. That's why your dogs smell other dogs' poop. So, but if your dog doesn't have hard poop, like if your dog has soft poop, mm-hmm. then the anal glands don't naturally express, and the dog's anal glands fill up, and sometimes they get infected, and sometimes they burst open, and they cause really, really gnarly problems in your dog's butthole. So a lot of little dogs like you have, people feed canned food or a mm-hmm. lot of people food, so the dog always has chronically soft stool or diarrhea. Mm-hmm. So they always mm-hmm. have anal gland issues. So people take their dog to the groomer to do the anal sac expression, but groomers are not allowed to go into the butthole. They can't mm-hmm. invasively express the anal gland. They have to do it from the outside, which only will express about 50% of the content of that sac. Mm-hmm. So you have to take your animal to the vet hospital to do this. Mm-hmm. Or just feed your dog like regular hard dog food, and if it has hard poops, it probably won't have an issue until it's older. Or, you know, if your dog consistently has soft poop, you could put pumpkin in your dog's food. Pumpkin will harden up the stool and make your dog have harder poops and then express those anal sacs.
All right.
Yeah, so you could try all those things, but I still recommend everybody getting their dog's anal sacs checked from time to time, because if your dog has an anal sac issue, it's a big problem. So what you can watch for is fishy smells coming from your dog's butt area, or your dog scooting on the carpet or licking their butthole a lot. And if your dog is doing that, and a lot of people already know about anal sac issues because their dog had a problem, but I'm trying to help people prevent those problems. Don't wait for your dog to have an anal gland issue, because then they're going to have that issue forever. Like, once they have the anal gland problems, you have to continually take them to go get those things expressed once a month, twice a month, or whatever your dog's situation is. But my dog, I do it at home. Like, I express her anal glands. Even though my dog eats the best food and I don't give her a lot of people food and she hardly ever has diarrhea or soft mm-hmm. stool, I still express her anal glands because I don't want to risk her getting impacted and getting an infection and it becoming an abscess and draining. And people's dogs get all kinds of problems. My friend's dog got anal gland cancer because he kept having chronic anal gland issues. Damn. So he ended up getting a tumor, and a tumor spread into his lymph nodes, and the dog died from cancer that started in the anal sac because they weren't getting expressed often enough or whatever. You know, it's just, who knows. Something definitely
there's the business in that. You could have your little own anal bus.
Yeah, just with a dog's butthole. You know, it's like the back doors is a dog's butthole that opens up.
It's like, yeah.
No, I don't want to just do that. I want to do other stuff too. I could clean ears. Yeah. I could clip nails. I can give advice. Clean teeth. I could do non-anesthetic dentals. I can do a lot of stuff, man. So if you ever need any help with your dog, you better let me know. And all my comedy friends out there, this is how I want to make money. I don't want to teach out of school anymore. The best thing about being a teacher is you don't work on the weekends.
Yeah.
Other than that, It's a hard job, man. You got to actually care, mm-hmm. and you're putting all this effort and love and attention into these strangers, mm-hmm. you know, that after they're done with my class, 99% of them I will never see again or even mm-hmm. think about again. Mm-hmm. I could be putting all that energy into my wife, my family, my pets. I understand service. You know, I believe in God. I think that you should help other people. But I've been doing it for a long ass time, and now I want to, like, you know, I didn't come to LA to be a fucking teacher. You know what I mean? I could be with my family at home helping them in Indiana. I did not come to Los Angeles to be a teacher. I love teaching. It's a great gig. Any comic out there that's a teacher will agree with me. You get to practice your material. At least you get to practice entertaining a room with material. You can't talk about nothing. It's not, you know, you got to come with material. And the better you know your material, the better your sets are going to be. And if you're teaching the same class more than once, it's like doing multiple shows. You can improve your material. You can add in tags and punchlines.
Yeah, it zaps you of all your energy.
Yeah, man. It is exhausting, though. It's fucking exhausting. It is for sure. But before we got cut off, we were talking about, you know, just being a teacher and all that. It's fine. What I wanted to talk to you about before we start running out of time is your sobriety, man. When I first met you, you were drinking, and then you decided to quit drinking. And how long has that been now?
Approaching 3 years of sobriety. September 11th, it'll be 3 years since I've had to drink alcohol.
That's awesome, man. And, you know, my wife and I went sober for a little while, and you were one of my motivators. You sent me a nice message motivating me to keep going. We went 90 days with no alcohol, which, you know, when we were first talking about not drinking, we originally said 1 month. 90 days seemed impossible. Yeah. So for us to be able to do it, felt really good just to have that kind of control, because my wife and I are pretty much everyday drinkers. We'll have a glass of wine or a beer damn near every day, right? So that's what we're back to. We reverted back to our old ways, but I was getting like blackout drunk. That's why I stopped.
Yeah,
I got blackout drunk on a business trip and missed a flight, and it cost me a bunch of money, and my wife was all mad at me, and I was just super embarrassed. I got drunk in front of coworkers like that. And so I decided to take a break. But it did, since the break, I haven't like went overboard yet again, and I just hope that never happens. But you, as soon as you got the bottle in your hand, you're opening yourself up for bad shit to happen.
Oh, for sure, man. I think that's why I went sober, because I kept blacking out way too much. And the thing is, like, we work in bars, you know, or at least we used to work in bars and restaurants and clubs, and you get paid in drink tickets, or you get paid in cash, or like there's drugs, and there's literally like freaking everything you could think of. Sorry, I don't know if you're picking up that sound. That's my dog throwing a bunch of shit around because she wants attention.
No, I got to just protect your phone button.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's the most important thing, is just to be there for my wife. I got sober for her, and I just realized, like, through the work, that I haven't been even showing up for myself. I would, you know, phone in sets. I would drink and then get on stage, or I would get mad when I got rejected for like a writing gig, and then just become jaded from it. Easily defeated before I even arrived. Like, how the hell am I gonna do in a room if I'm constantly like hungover or drunk, or just trying to be confrontational? Because I'm so stubborn, and I'm very, you know, I guess passionate on my ideas, that, you know, I will die on some of those hills. And but now that I'm sober, I'm like, hey, some of those were trash. So
I feel you.
Thank goodness I didn't, like...
How old are you? I'm sorry. I think you're, like, close to my age.
I'm 36.
How old are you? Oh, we're exactly the same age. 83?
84.
Okay, so I'm a little bit older than you. But that's cool, dude. That's, I think that's the age where you start to realize you're not willing to die on some of the hills that you were when you were younger.
Yeah, because when we were
especially
young,
after,
we're
you,
stupid.
Like you said, you get married. Yeah. You do it for your wife, too.
Yeah, and I didn't want to have that, because, you know, you have all those, you know, bad relationships in the past. You're like, oh man, I was not the best person during that relationship. Like, oh, no wonder I can't have a successful relationship. Like, I don't even know who the hell I am. So what am I doing bringing these people into my world? So as soon as that happened, where I was like, who the fuck am I, during, you know, when my wife and I, my would-be wife, was dating, I didn't even know who the hell I was, and that brought up a lot of anger issues and everything. I'm like, oh, that's right. Once I sobered up and I realized that I am, that I've got my own trauma and my own anxiety and issues that I dealt with, finally dealt with them, then I was able to, you know, get past that bullshit. And it's like, yeah, if I can't deal with this now, if I can't deal with these some people that I work with, how the hell am I going to be able to continue on? Because you're going to meet people out there that you don't agree with, of course, but you know, you don't have to like confront everybody about everything or make them change. And that was the biggest revelation for me. I'm like, how dare you not live my life story? How dare you not be the person I wrote in my life, or the book that is my life? Like, the hell. And I realized that was just a psychotic, sociopathic behavior. So I had to like back up off that and just, number one, start being there for my wife more, not being a piece of shit or arguing with her all the time over my points. And then it's really helped. It's led to a lot more amicable situations for me.
No, I agree. I think, you know, having self-discipline and just self-control and not, you know, using substances as a crutch, mm-hmm. you have to know who you really are to step away from those things for a while. And to be able to step away takes a lot of strength. And then to be able to step away for a long time like you're doing takes a ton of strength. And then you learn who you are through that. You learn that you're capable mm-hmm. of really difficult things. And then you realize you're capable of really good things when your heart is in the right place. So then you learn from that. You learn mm-hmm. that I can apply that in other areas. If my heart is in the right place and mm-hmm. I really, really want to accomplish something, no matter how difficult it may seem in the beginning, mm-hmm. nothing's impossible. Mm-hmm. And you learn that little by little, and then it just chips away at the parts of you that you don't need. It's like, that's why you're like shedding. You're like shedding yeah. shit you don't need as you go along this little journey. And you know, you just don't want to carry so much shit. It's like going on a trip. If you're new to traveling, you overpack.
Yeah.
But if you travel, you learn only what you need. Only bring what you need. Everything else, you can't get upset because you lose shit breaks, things get stolen, things get left in taxi cabs and hotel rooms, and it's like, oh, well, there goes a $2,000 camera. There goes my $300 jacket. And you don't get those things back when you're traveling. I'm not talking about fucking city to city. I'm talking like countries, continents.
Yeah.
You know, you lose something, it's gone.
You begin to realize after traveling, you only need like 3 or 4 outfits max. Outfits.
Right.
And I think that's a good way to approach life too. Like, hey, you don't need all these things. You just need like, hey, your favorite 3 or 4 things. Then you'll be fine.
Yeah, and I'm really, you know, you got married, and I think that you seem happier to me after that. And, you know, my life definitely has more direction after getting married, and it wasn't for mm-hmm. that. I didn't get married because I needed direction. I got married because I knew I was never going to do better. That was my driving force.
For sure. Like,
I knew that this is as good as I'm ever going to do. She's the best. She's better than me. Mm-hmm. And I think that before her, I always kind of didn't notice that I was dating down. Mm-hmm. But I dated girls that liked me because I was a comedian. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just, I met girls through comedy. Mm-hmm. So now that's not it. I met my wife when I first started doing comedy. She was there when I first did it. Me and her were already dating. She's like the only one that I'll ever know isn't with me because of what they think I am as a comedian.
Oh, for sure.
And I think that helps me feel a lot better about her, where her heart is. And then just knowing her as a person, she's just got a big heart. Not like anybody else I've ever met. So that helps me too. I see that there's actually good people out there, people that aren't grumpy all the time and curmudgeon-y like me. And and it's like, good. I'm glad that people still believe in holidays. Like, my wife loves holidays. Oh, yeah. I don't, you know, I don't give a shit. Yeah. But after seeing how happy it makes her and her son and her family, it's like, okay, I see the value, you know, at least I get it. It's not that it's not wrong. Mm-hmm. To love holidays. It's actually wrong for me to try to convince other people that holidays are stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which I used to try to do.
That's the same thing with my wife. She has it together. And I was like, there's no way you could have everything together. Everything together? That's just ridiculous. How are you happy most of the time? That is ridiculous. I don't believe it. And then, it's okay, Abby.
Gotta take care of the dog.
She's like over here barking at something. She thinks it's okay. She's tripping over here. I don't know if my apartment is haunted or what, but sometimes she'll just be staring off into space and just like barking like a psychopath.
That is possible. That comes up in the podcast a lot. Can dogs see other dimensions? Can dogs and cats see other dimensions? And it's been argued it could possibly be. We don't know how they see. We just assume.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very perceptive of, like, energies and all that. Because, you know, a dog will just judge you immediately. They're looking at you. They're like, huh, do I want to chill with this person or not? And they're pretty good about it.
Hell yeah, man. When people used to come over to record the podcast mm-hmm. live, my dog would, like, either she would bark at you for an hour and a half, mm-hmm. or she'd bark at you like for the first minute and then stop. So it's like, okay, what's wrong with some people? How come some people she doesn't like and other people she like, it, she doesn't even really notice them?
And
it's weird because my dog will bark at the same people no matter what. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's funny. Probably she didn't get along with him in like a past life or something. And she's like, you again.
Something like that.
Exactly. I'm a puppy this time. How'd you get to be human? So, this sucks.
It probably is like that. They could probably see past lives. I hope so. Reincarnation sounds like fun to me. As long as I don't come back as like an inanimate object. Like what if I'm just like a chair?
Yeah.
That would suck.
You come back as like a wind chime or something. I'm just here to tell people about the wind. That's about it, guys. That's all I got going on for me.
And you can't even do that. You just say chinga chinga ling ling jinga jinga ling, and some people hate you. A spider makes a home in your fucking head.
Yeah, and you're just hanging out on the porch like all through the seasons. You're just like, fuck, what a rough life. Yep.
Start getting windy, and then you live like 40, 50 years, and the house gets like the house goes under, like the people go bankrupt and they abandon it, and then no one ever fix up the house, and then you're just there. Then a homeless guy moves in.
Or a fucking badass kid just steals you off the front porch and just turns you into a bong or something. You're like, oh man, what a rough.
I guess it wouldn't be so bad. That's what I think reincarnation is. Like, you could come back as damn near anything. Like, pretty much, you can come back as anything. Mm-hmm. You might live for a second, and you might live for 1,000 years. Like, what if you come back as a rock? And you're just like, oh shit, I'm a rock in the middle of, like, the fucking Joshua tree. Your friend is a cactus.
Man, someone's sitting on me doing shrooms. Again. Is this gonna happen every freaking weekend? Jeez, they smell like kombucha. Ugh.
I always go out there and take rocks home with me. So those are the ones that probably were like screaming, so my inner like dimensional being could hear them. Like, take me home, pick me. Because I'll go out there and every once in a while I'll see a rock that like sticks out to me and I have to take it. I'm like compulsive. I have to take it home with me. It ends up in my pocket. It ends up in my apartment. And now I have rocks.
Wait, do you put it like in your little dragon beard's cage or something?
I have a rock in there, but he keeps... No, not really. I have them in my car, and I have them in a drawer. They're my good luck rocks.
Jeez, were you...
Because he'll poop on them. He likes to poop on stuff. If I put anything in there, he'll poop on it.
Were you like a white woman in a past life where you're collecting rocks and crystals and just stealing?
I guess, man.
Stealing from Mother Nature?
Stealing from a national park, just like, I guess so, man.
Ruining the ecosystem because you want to feel closer to the earth.
No, I'm a Native American. I'm a Native American. The Mother Earth is my mother.
Wait,
too.
Are you really
my mother
Native
gives
American?
Me whatever I want. Well, I'm Mexican. We were on this continent.
Oh man,
California is technically Mexico.
Dude, that makes me think of like have you seen Latino History for Dummies or Idiots or like.
Yeah, with John Leguizamo.
That's like the biggest secret, in like American history that Mexican people are Native Americans.
Hell yeah, we were here. They came and they killed us and told us to learn Spanish and believe in Jesus.
And gave you fucking STDs, like the.
And gave us diseases that killed millions of
like
people.
The Mayan culture was, of course, in Mexico, and they were expanding and migrating into the U.S. And so Native Americans are Mexicans.
Yeah. I mean, we grew up knowing that. Like, you have some Mexicans that look hella Indian, you know? Like, in Mexico, Mexicans in Mexico, not Americanized ones. Not ones like me that obviously have a lot of, like, European Spanish blood, you know, I'm not 5 foot tall. Mm-hmm. So you already know that I have Spanish blood. I got some European in me. So other than that, when you go to Mexico, there's like Indian ass looking Mexicans. Mm-hmm. They look hella fucking Apache or
super indigenous
whatever.
Looking.
Super indigenous as fuck. Yeah. So like my mom used to always tell us that they call the Indio Mexicans, like the ones that are like indigenous, and they don't even speak the same language. They don't speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. They speak indigenous languages. They can speak Spanish because they go down and sell stuff. Mm-hmm. But when I was in Mexico when I was young, they came down and they would like sell belts and shit that they made from their cow hides. They were all like cow farmers, and they look like out of a movie, out of a movie Indian tribe down there selling their wares. in a in pretty much third world Mexico cartel style.
Oh, nice.
It's just a weird environment, but I appreciate the kind of history in me. When I'm taking rocks from Joshua Tree, I do feel like I have a connection to the earth.
Right,
I do
use that as an excuse,
especially when I'm smoking weed.
Yeah.
If I get high. And a lot of people I'm with, man, if I'm not the only one, there's all these people I talk to that like have these attractions to rocks for some reason. My wife too. My wife and I will spend hours picking through rocks looking for ones that we want to take home. And we'll pick up one, look at it, throw it. Pick up another one, look at it, keep it. And what's the difference between one rock and another is totally subjective. They're both just fucking rocks. There's a billion of them out there.
That's funny, man. Just that image of you and your wife out there just like picking through rocks and just people walking by like, what the hell are they doing?
And we, yes, and we have shit to do. We have like real responsibilities, and we're out here like... But then you go to like Venice Beach, where they have all the people out there selling rocks. Like they just put a little strap around it, call it a necklace, sell it to a tourist for $5.
Yeah, this will bring you closer to your chakras.
And oh, remember when I ran into you in the Venice Beach randomly that one time? Do you remember
this? I do remember that. It rings a bell for sure.
Yeah, you were with your now wife, but she wasn't your wife then. And I was in a little bar that they used to host an open mic. But I think I was just there hanging out by myself.
Yeah, I remember that bar with like, I forgot what it's called, but there's that patio area. There's like aluminum siding all along it with a bunch of like,
Yeah, it's like got an Irish theme, but it's, I can't remember what it's called. It might just be like Venice Beach Pub or something generic like that. But yeah, dude, that was cool just to like see somebody I know out there. That was like way before, dude. We got to start wrapping this up. We've been on for almost an hour and a half. And the topic I have, I have one segment. The segment is, how do you feel about eating meat?
Eating meat? Oh, I'm a big carnivore. I love a good ribeye. I eat all the meats.
Do you have any?
Go ahead. My last meal would probably be a nice ribeye with some probably asparagus with a little garlic on it. Yeah, that'll definitely, and then some homemade garlic mashed potatoes. That would probably be my last meal.
Oh shit! Well, fuck. My last meal would have like surf and turf, dude. I would have some lobster, some steak, some chicken, maybe a hot dog. I love surf and turf. I love like when they put lobster, crab, shrimp, like a shrimp boat with like sausage and all. Dude, I love meat, but ethically, my question to you is this. Have you ever considered going vegan, or have you ever tried vegan vegetarian like as just like a break from meat?
Oh, yeah. No, I did it one time for a whole year where I just decided not to have meat. I think it was mainly because I wanted to – it was for vanity purposes. I wanted to lose a little more weight quicker, and I was able to do it. It melts off of you when you stop eating meat for a little bit for my body type. But then I couldn't work out as much. That was the problem. I couldn't work out as much because every time I'd lift or something too much or go on a sprint for too long, I would start seeing spots. You know, seeing spots. But then I fine-tuned. I just realized I was like low in iron, because that happens. Like you get most of your iron from beef. And so I was able to tune that and, you know, just be more healthy. And then one night I got super drunk and I ate a bratwurst, and then I just, you know, got off the vegan train or the vegetarian train.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I eat meat, like I said. And my wife and I, we went vegan for a little while. I think it was like, I went two weeks and she went like a month just vegan. And it was fine. I mean, vegan food is good. I like tofu. I like... The miraculous burger, what do they call it?
Impossible burger?
Impossible burger. Yes, that's what it is. Mm. So, I mean, all those things taste good to me. So it wasn't that hard, but I still want to eat meat. I still like eating meat.
Yeah, and when I don't know
about
all that synthetic
stuff, man.
My little
vegan vegetarian kick.
Yeah, all that synthetic stuff, like anything that's created in a lab, I don't know, and it bleeds like meat. I'm like, what is that? What is that? I'm gonna wait till maybe like 5 years and to see what it does to people, and then I'll be able to consume it without thinking like, oh, what the hell is this stuff?
Yeah, nobody knows. It's brand new. Nobody knows. And everybody's already getting cancer now from shit. So it's like, you should just eat what you like, what you fucking know. You what just, you know is what it is. Don't try new things quite
whatever
yet.
Eat whatever you want within reason. That, if you want to just eat all the donuts, go do it. Just know that there are consequences for everything.
Well, that's just it. So you have no consequences to eating as much meat as you want, or do you think that they should regulate how meat is like packaged and controlled, like the factory farming situation?
Factory farming is, from what I understand, it's really bad for the animals. But god damn it, dude, those steaks taste so good when you know they come from those animal prisons. I don't know. I know it's bad, but I mean, we gotta eat. People gotta eat.
So if the laws change, and this is just me playing devil's advocate, mm-hmm. I really don't give a shit. Yeah. I think that as long as I eat meat, then I'm just a hypocrite if I say that you can't. Mm-hmm. So I do eat meat. But for devil's advocate's sake, if they change the laws where you couldn't eat any meat that you didn't raise yourself, would you be okay with that? Okay. Like, they didn't sell meat at the stores anymore. You had to have your own fucking cow or go to a friend who has a cow and, like, do it directly. That you have to, like, be a part of that process. Man. You can't just go buy a pack of steaks from Vaughn's. No, doesn't exist.
Absolutely not. Like, the fuck? I'm not going to go out there with a hunting bow. I'm not, you know, I'm not Joe Rogan where I can just fly out into the middle of Montana and, like, hunt down an animal or, like, find somebody with a cow, man. If they pass that law, that's how, like, politicians are going to get assassinated. Like, you're telling me to go make, but get the fuck out of here. I got to work 10 jobs to pay for these bills, and now I gotta raise a cow? Like, the fuck? In LA? Like, dude, my apartment is like 500 square feet. Where the fuck am I gonna raise a cow? No, that.
You wouldn't. You would end up just eating smaller animals, like something that you could house.
No, I would go rob meat from whoever has the most meat, and just the fuck? Like, no, I would not.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me that they would just leave the country. Like, no, I would just move out of the United States to a country that lets us still eat meat. I'm like, I guess that's a good option.
I would stay here and I would
boycott, protest.
I would boycott. I would just drive to every fucking meat store and just deep freeze everything and just have plenty of meat. That would be insane if they were to limit meat consumption. Like, no, this is
like rations.
This is America. How dare you ration me?
You can't take away my guns. You can't take away my cows.
Right. No, you can't take away
Texas will be pissed.
Yeah, we'd have a bigger uprising than the one you see now telling people they can't eat meat. Like, no, that's insanity.
Like, prohibition didn't work. Neither would veganism.
Yeah, like mandatory veganism or, like, where you have to raise your own food. Like, I'm not a fucking farmer. Get the hell out of here. I mean, I can. I could plant a seed and, like, you know, be able to make my own food. I can do that just fine, but if it only because I want to, not because I have to.
Yeah, I feel you, dude. I like going down to Vaughn's. I'm gonna go soon. I'm super hungry. I haven't eaten anything yet today. I just drink coffee until I start feeling hungry.
Yeah, that's not healthy, dude.
But that was it, man. That's my only segment is how do you feel about eating meat? And then that's it. So unless you have any questions about your dog, you have any questions for me? Anything I can help you with you guys' brand new puppy child?
She's getting bored. She gets bored with her food. So I don't know what the hell to do aside from, like, not feed her until certain hours of the day. And I don't like leaving her food out. Because, you know, my wife's like, that's not sanitary.
Yeah, you should definitely... You should meal feed. Don't just leave food out. And what, she used to eat it and now she doesn't?
Yeah, like, when it comes to me, I think she plays around. Like, she knows I'll buckle and, like, put some liver treats inside her meal, which she's not supposed to have. Don't tell my wife I do that because she uses only those for training. But when I get frustrated, she's just looking at me. She looks at her bowl of food and she looks at me. She's like, hey, maybe throw a little something interesting on this, will ya? You know what I like. And I
mean, it's your dog. I mean, you guys do what you want. I mean, okay, so for, like, my dog, if I want her, say we're about to leave for the day, and I need her to eat her bowl of food because she's going to be alone for a couple of hours, I will, like, crumble up a treat and sprinkle it in her food, so she'll like mow it down. Otherwise, she'll eat it later. You know, but you got a little dog; she don't need to eat all the time. Yeah. Your dog is small; it doesn't need to eat all the time. So you, the only thing you could do is leave little bowls down. Your dog is pretty young, so it needs to eat.
Yeah,
but put a bowl down. If she doesn't start eating right away, take it away, and then offer it to her a little bit later. She doesn't eat, take it away.
A couple of hours.
Offer it to her a little bit later.
What do you think?
And you're gonna have to. I mean, as long as it takes. I mean, maybe every 30 minutes, every hour, just to see if she'll bite. Because dogs are never going to let themselves starve to death. If your dog is hungry, it's going to eat. But if your dog is smart, it learns. Like you said, if he just waits it out, if she just waits it out, gives you the puppy dog eyes, you're going to give it a treat. It's just how it goes. Your dog is very smart. It's already going to know that.
Yeah.
So you just have to be very consistent about feeding times and feeding the same food. And your dog is hungry, it's going to eat. People always think, oh, something's wrong with my dog. It's not eating. It's like, well, if every time your dog doesn't eat, you give it treats, you're teaching it to wait. Like, if it just waits long enough, it's going to get that treat it wants. So don't do that. And then the portion feeding, the meal feeding is always important. Your dog isn't that young, but it's still in that, you know, puppy phase. So you do have to give it puppy food until it's like a year old, and then you should switch over to adult food. Are you guys doing that?
Yeah, we're giving her... like canned food, like from Royal Canine. Apparently that's the good one. That's the one we got for her. And we'll like boil chicken breast and put it in there for her. Like dice it up, add a little chicken. She loves that. That's the only way she really fucking goes to town.
Yeah, boiled chicken is great. Royal Canin is a good brand. I mean, the only reason I tell people to watch the soft food is because it sticks to their teeth. They're more likely to have teeth issues, so you should brush your dog's teeth or take them to get regular cleanings, dental cleanings at the animal hospital. But you could brush your dog's teeth.
Yeah, my wife's got that covered. I mean, no matter she's a hygienist, so she brushes her teeth, and then she brushes my puppy's teeth every single night, like clockwork.
Great. That's what everybody's supposed to do. And people think hard food is better for your dog's teeth. It's a little bit better, but hard food sticks to their teeth too. So you guys should be brushing your dog's teeth no matter what it eats. But canned food, you know, as long as you're not overfeeding, it's fine. Dogs love it, right? So just you shouldn't need to add treats to canned food. Dogs already like canned food. So just wait your dog out. Don't let it become spoiled. Little dogs get spoiled.
Oh, man. Big time.
And then they're, you know, my dog is spoiled as fuck.
Rotten.
Dude. Super spoiled. Like, and she begs at the table, and it's all my fault because I love her so much that I sometimes break. Like, I'm pretty good about not giving my dog food from the table, but I break every once in a while, so she begs every time.
Oh, no, my dog, if she tries to beg at the table, she gets popped on the butt, man. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, well, I used to not accept it, but my wife accepts it. So it can't be both. You know, my dog will just get confused if one of us doesn't let her and the other one does. And I gave my wife so many opportunities. My rule should be the dog's in the crate when we eat. The dog stays in the crate when we eat. When we're done eating, she can come out of the crate. And that's the way I would raise my dog. But this isn't my dog. This is my wife's dog. So I have to compromise.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't want to be an asshole.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it is fine. My dog is a good dog. I've worked with a bunch of dogs, and I'm very lucky. My dog listens. My dog is good. My dog is not aggressive. My dog goes in the crate if I tell her to go in the crate. So I don't have any complaints. And my dog gets along with my cat, which is also
that's
awesome.
Cool
and my
see.
Bearded dragon.
What? They get along with the dragon?
Yeah, they all hang out
Are
together.
Are you serious?
It's the shit. Yes, the dog and the cat.
You're like Dr. Doolittle
it's
over
awesome.
There.
I have my own little... That's exactly what I'm aiming at. That's what I wanted to be when I was a kid. I wanted to be Dr. Doolittle.
You wanted to be black.
No, Dr. Doolittle was a white dude when I was a kid. Dr. Doolittle was like this movie from the 50s or 60s.
Oh, that's right. Like, yeah, it is a remake, right? It's with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the Eddie Murphy one was way later, and it was corny. It was not good. Sorry, Eddie Murphy. I did not like your remake of the,
How dare
the movie
you?
That I grew up
How
loving.
How dare you?
Stick to Nutty Professor. That movie is fucking hilarious. And Norbit. Those are fucking awesome.
What about now, how they remade it with Robert Downey Jr., the epic telling of Dr. Doolittle as a pirate slash Renaissance man?
I guess it didn't do well in theaters, but I didn't see it. I wasn't interested. And I'm a Downey Jr. fan, man. Iron Man all fucking day.
But what the hell? Dr. Doolittle, like, told on that kind of thing? Like, get the hell out of here. That was the worst bet he could have made.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a good idea to me.
He'll be fine.
And then it wasn't. You know, I was like, nah, that seems stupid. And then it didn't do well. I'm like, oh, I was right.
Yeah.
But maybe it's awesome. Who knows? I'll give it a shot.
I won't.
That's, maybe I'll make my students watch it and not tell them to tell me how it was.
They're your guinea pigs?
Yeah. Nah, I never make them do shit like that, but maybe I'll start. All right, dude, we're about to wrap up here. Do you got any social media you want to plug? Any online shows or anything like that coming up?
I'll be posting everything on my Instagram, at Dapper Duong, DapperDuong.
Awesome. So you guys check them out. You'll find the spelling and all that in the description. And you guys can follow the Pet Peeves Podcast on Instagram as well, at Pet Peeves Podcast, or on Twitter at Pet Peeves Pod. You can find me, Albert Escobedo, on Instagram at Albert Escobedo, or on Twitter at Albert M. Escobedo. Send any pet questions to me through the Gmail, petpeevespodcast@gmail.com, or on Facebook, you can send pet questions. Other than that, thank you guys for listening. Listen to the podcast on Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, and Anchor, and some other ones. If you want to be a podcast sponsor, do it on Anchor and buy the cat fountain. Thank you, Alex, for being here. Yeah. I know we tried to do this so many times, so just thank you so much for being here. And, you know, we'll have you on again in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Any pet questions, ask me. Thank you so much.
Hey.
All right, you guys. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.